know this space, right? We have all undoubtedly experienced our own generosity, compassion, creativity, selflessness, possibly a deep knowing that steers us well. And we also know we will find some murkiness inside. We don't have to dig too deep to find a bit of envy or selfishness, bitterness. I know I'm regularly dismayed to find and notice what's going on inside of me. The me I don't like ranges from just cringy and awkward to unhelpful to hurtful and harmful. That's the one that gets me into trouble, that does things that triggers my shame and my fear. Anyone relate to this side as well? Since you all said no, or it depends, I guess, then yes, you do. Since we don't live as that good self all the time, we might develop some suspicion towards ourselves. We know we can lead ourselves into trouble. It must be our stupid heart, our foolish emotions. Because when we get all riled up inside, we do dumb stuff. But what's more alarming to me is the way I do things that surprise me. I accidentally say the thing I was trying not to say, or I'm just weird or rude or hurtful by accident. So between those kind of surprises and the murkiness that lurks within, it's easy to conclude that we can't trust ourselves. And there are more than a few Bible verses that may be why church folks in particular may have some reluctance to trusting our hearts. These verses describe the ways our hearts let us down and the evil that is in our hearts. So in addition to our own experience of acting badly, Scripture, I would argue, especially if it was misused and misunderstood, may have also contributed to this lack of trust in ourselves. So in Matthew, for example, Jesus is quoting Isaiah, and he talks about the heart growing callous. This people's heart has grown callous. They hardly hear with their ears, and they've closed their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn, and I would heal them. I notice the way he speaks about the heart shows that our hearts seem to have capacity for good, for wisdom and understanding, right? But they have become hardened, and then they lose that ability for understanding. The verse that I hear most often from people, the one that seems to really trouble us, is in Jeremiah. The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? So we all have our own reactions to this. It's probably safe to say it has been misused. People use it as an excuse for their behavior. Yeah, my heart's deceitful. People use it to condemn and control others. And people share with me how this verse has troubled them. They either believe it and take it to heart, which means they're living with this treacherous peace inside of them, or they don't believe it, and then they struggle to be part of a system that thinks this way about their heart, a heart they view as the source of intuition and inner knowing. But what if this is a way to acknowledge that tension inside us and the way we do mess up? And what if it's only part of the story? Because just a few verses later, Jeremiah says God is on the case. God sends God's Spirit to us, and it says, I will put my law in their minds and write it on their hearts. So this is referring to the mysterious presence and infilling of the divine in the human, which involves a changing heart. So maybe this is a way to explain the kind of different states we might find ourselves in. So speaking of states of the heart, an image shows up twice in Ezekiel and is quoted again in Hebrews. It's repeating. Central to the covenant that God makes with Israel. It says, I will give you a new heart, and a new spirit I will put within you, and I will remove the heart of stone, the hard heart, from your flesh, and I will give you a heart of flesh. I can hear God's excitement in that. I'll give you a soft heart. I'll be your God, and you'll be my people. Paul picks up on this later in his letter to the Ephesians. There's a lot of amazing nuggets in here. I have difficulty quoting Ephesians without the whole thing. Here we go. So I say this and affirm in the Lord that you are to no longer walk just as the Gentiles also walk in the futility of their minds, being darkened in their understanding, absence of light, excluded from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardness of their heart. And they, having become callous, have given themselves up to indecent behavior for the practice of every kind of impurity with greediness. but you didn't learn Christ in this way, if indeed you have heard him and been taught in him, just as truth is in Jesus. That in reference to your former way of life, you are to rid yourselves of the old self, which is being corrupted in accordance with the lusts of deceit. And you are to be renewed in the spirit of your minds to put on the new self, which is in the likeness of God and has been created in righteousness and holiness of the truth. So ridding yourself of falsehood, speak truth each one of you with his neighbor, because we're parts of one another. That's so cool. Be angry and don't sin. All bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and slander must be removed from you along with all malice. Be kind to one another, compassionate, tender-hearted, forgiving each other just as God in Christ also has forgiven you. Paul is getting to the heart of the matter and using some badly behaving Gentiles as an example. He says they're in the terrible state they're in, distant from truth and God, because of the hardness of their hearts. They're using their free will to paint themselves into a corner where their best and most creative idea for how to meet the deep needs of their souls is to do terrible things. They had hardened and calloused their hearts, and so they numbed their capacity to pick up on the resonance of God in creation, in their own hearts, and in other people. When the human heart is hard, we lose our way. We become deceived. And then we overly rely on our human defense mechanisms to protect us and our basic instincts to guide us. Paul is reminding the Jesus followers in Ephesus of something probably they already know. There's a better way, and it involves a soft heart. Be kind and tender-hearted, he says. Remember, God has given you a heart of flesh. God is with us, helping us, not against us, and God is within us. So yes, I guess we can say that unhelpful and harmful behavior does come out of the heart, but a heart that is in a state of hardness. Maybe we can trust our hearts. Maybe it's about discerning what's going on in there and coming to know ourselves. So we're moving from a kind of black and white binary of good, bad, angel, devil, to seeing some movement and flux, hardening and softening. There's nuance. Be angry, but don't sin. Stay soft. So maybe it's not that the heart itself is untrustworthy because we have the capacity to do bad things. It's not that some of us just have bad hearts. We all have both poles or states inside us. The old self, as Paul calls it, is the space we're moving away from. And the new self is what we're moving and growing towards because of the Spirit of God within. So remember from last sermon, I talked about the spirit-led self inside us, which by definition cannot be harmed or damaged, although it can be obscured and it can be ignored. So I'm picturing our hearts working a bit like the iris in our eyes. It's an adjustable opening that can restrict the amount of light that enters. Our heart constricts to protect it, which is great. Living in this broken and beautiful world, some protection is necessary, is it not? It's just reality. It's just that our protective mechanism can be a little sensitive. It can get triggered at times when it doesn't necessarily need to be. And trauma survivors know that they need to work on rewiring their protective mechanism so they fire only when they're needed. I think we tend to be unhelpfully hard on ourselves in attempts to control us and keep us on that good path. Historically, the church has had various ways to help us, some more helpful than others. One famous ecclesialist describes the characteristics of a hard heart. We know this as the seven deadly sins. It's not always used in helpful ways, but I actually find it quite the accurate description of what happens when my heart constricts, whatever the cause. When that happens, I just tend to walk more easily in conflict with myself and with others. I live more out of pride, greed, lust, anger, gluttony, envy, and laziness. Quick side note on pride here. I could probably talk about all of them, perhaps another sermon. In French, there's two separate words for pride. There's orgueil, which is what we're talking about here. It's the unhelpful kind of pride. It's selfish and puffed up. And then there's fierté, which is more a helpful kind of pride, more about the childlike pleasure of just doing something satisfying. So it may be safe to say that orgueil is the constricted version and fierté is the relaxed version. A hard heart doesn't tend to steer us well. St. Ignatius wrote a lot about discernment, and he advises us not to make big decisions when we're in this kind of state. This state of the heart cannot always be trusted, but it still needs to be noticed and received with gentleness. More on that in a little bit. The hardened heart tends to lead us in the HPTFTU zone, our human propensity to mess things up. Because of that capacity in all of us, we get the idea we cannot trust our hearts. But this hardening and softening is a constant movement inside us, isn't it? The church recognizes that, also listing 7 virtues corresponding to the 7 deadly sins. These are the natural expressions of a heart that is relaxed and soft. They just flow out of the heart that's secure in God's love and the abundance of the universe. When my heart relaxes and rests in the love of God, I walk more in humility, generosity, innocence, patience, sobriety, love, and right action. My soft heart expresses itself in a loving, beautiful way that will be in harmony with others. So let's do some more contrasting of these two states of the heart and borrowing here, kind of jamming together Richard Rohr and David Benner. The more our heart heads toward hardness, the more it tries to earn and strive and compete to be worthy. It sees itself as separate and cut off. It grasps things that act as surrogates for what we truly need. And it often brings about exactly what it fears most. The soft heart knows its worth is intrinsic and inherent. It sees itself connected to the whole, held in love, and it lives in abundance instead of scarcity. The hard heart creates personas, false images, and idols to impress others, while the soft heart just is what it is. A child of God, image bearer of the divine, and that's enough. The hard heart, though, needs constant reassurance and pats on the back, while the soft heart is just seeking connection. The hard heart competes and excludes, rushing to judgment, while the soft heart includes, is patient, and is able to celebrate others. The hard heart has to try really hard, while the soft heart lives in the flow of grace. Verses in 1 John describe what living with a soft heart and trusting ourselves might look like, contrasting that with a hard heart. If anyone sees a fellow believer in need and has the means to help them, yet shows no pity and closes their heart against them, how is it even possible that God's love lives in them? Does it mean that that's not there or it's just not, like, alive, right? Beloved children, our love can't be an abstract theory we only talk about, but a way of life demonstrated through our loving deeds. We know that the truth lives in us because we demonstrate love in action, which will reassure our hearts in God's presence. Whenever our hearts make us feel guilty and remind us of our failures, other translations say if our hearts condemn us, we know that God is much greater and more merciful than our conscience. And God knows everything there is to know about us. My delightfully loved friends, when our hearts don't condemn us, we have a bold freedom to speak face to face with God. God constantly lives and flourishes in us by the Spirit that God has given us. Soft-heartedness leads to compassion for others and loving deeds, love in action. And then that reassures our hearts because we see we have the capacity for good. We know what it's like to experience the flow of God, the flow of love inside us. But when our hearts get worried and clench in fear, God's mercy still meets us. And we can more easily communicate with God, working together with God, united with God, God's life flourishing in us. In any case, soft or hard-heartedness is not our identity. They are states of the heart or habits we develop. Our identity lies in bearing the image of God. We are beautiful creations in whom God delights. Because of this, there's at least a part of us that recognizes God things, that hears God's invitations and knows how to respond to them. There's a resonance when we behold beauty, something pings inside us. When we serve together, or when we're moved together, there's a pinging between our hearts and with God's heart. The more our heart connects with God's heart, the more it can relax in the assurance that it is loved and belongs, and the more it can receive God's love and acceptance. It's just this beautiful, virtuous circle situation, like the chicken and the egg. There's no clear beginning or end with this ring of being connected, relaxed, receiving. You can jump in anywhere, and each one leads to the next. So when you're connected, you can relax. And when you're relaxed, you can receive. And when you receive, you feel connected, and so on. When our heart is in this state, it's easier to pick up on that pinging of God and goodness and beauty and truth and creation inside us and in other people. This state of the heart has deep, good wisdom. Perhaps we can say this state of the heart can be trusted. Learning to trust ourselves is key to forging healthy relationships with other people and with God. Trusting ourselves means embracing our whole self without fear. Trusting ourselves means making the counterintuitive move of accepting our whole self, both wolves, both states of our hearts, and the whole range in between. It is what it is, and it serves us at our various developmental stages, and we keep growing in God's love. So when we notice that our heart is hard, we don't panic. Do not attack your hard heart or beat it up. Or stop trusting yourself. Instead, let's turn towards ourselves with kindness. Greet our heart. Invite it to loosen a little. Come talk to me, right? Open up to us. Tell us its concerns. Realize this is inner work, and all our feelings and behaviors are clues to what's going on inside. We can face what makes us feel most vulnerable. I think it's important to recognize any falsity. Trying to maintain our image and persona, and we want to move toward what is real, what is true. So we work with our idols and self-image, the stories we tell ourselves. We just notice them, let them loosen, let them go. They're not real. And we do well to find prayer practices that are tailored to our personality so that they're both the natural, easy ones for us and the confronting ones. And then let's discover and explore our softened hearts. There is a strength in here that we can come to know. So what does it look like to trust our hearts? Allison Cook, the co-author of Boundaries for the Soul, which is the book I mentioned last time, says trusting ourselves means a few things. Becoming aware of our needs and how to meet them. Some of us are allergic to noticing our own needs. There's a vulnerability there, right? That feels uncomfortable. And we're trying not to be selfish, and noticing our own needs might strike us as a selfish focus and attitude, but actually takes a lot of humility to acknowledge our humanity and our needs. And when we ignore them for whatever lovely reasons, they have sneakier and sneakier ways of getting met. We get passive-aggressive, we get weird, we act out in potentially harmful ways. Trusting ourselves also means taking responsibility for our actions. It's so much more convenient to blame others when things don't turn out well. But trusting ourselves means we show up even when we mess up. We want to honor our emotions in challenging situations. Our strong feelings need some airtime. Showing up for ourselves, trusting ourselves means honoring our emotions, whatever they are, whether or not we would call them valid. Emotions are not valid or invalid, they just are. So let's get curious about them and be tender. With our tender hearts. And trusting ourselves means building a support network that understands us. That might involve a little reshuffling of our relationships. Even just moving towards what we need right now might mean change. I had a wonderful spiritual director, and in this season I have a different wonderful spiritual director who's supporting me in just the way I need right now. And I still need other voices in my life. No one person can be everything for us. Sometimes we need to recognize when we're consistently misunderstood or not seen and do something about it. Trusting ourselves also means standing up for our convictions. It might mean not laughing at jokes that marginalize or contribute to othering. It might mean letting the awkwardness linger in the air, embracing the cringe. means putting our feet where our beliefs lie. We're so accustomed to so much cognitive dissonance, changing ourselves in order to smooth things over. Let's move towards aligning our choices with our convictions. So hard and so good. What happens when we don't trust ourselves? What does that look like? Second-guessing every thought, feeling our inkling, agonizing over decisions, over-analyzing, feeling stuck, sabotaging opportunities for happiness, avoiding leaning into our own wisdom and talents, playing it safe by default. It looks like deferring to others, whether that's parents or friends, leaders or partner. Google works great until someone fails you. And to be clear, deferring is not the same as consulting. Consulting is seeking input and deciding yourself. Deferring is making others make the decisions for you. And we can even defer to God. That looks like passively waiting for God to deliver us. We sit and wait for God while God waits for us. Little story about this. Back in the day, I was dissatisfied with my single life and decided I needed a big change and an adventure, which meant going to Australia. Not sure where that came from. But I looked at a few job postings, told a few people, and otherwise waited for it to happen to me because faith. I wasn't realizing that the reins of my life were in my hands. And you may be surprised to hear that it never actually happened. When we don't trust ourselves, we put ourselves at the mercy of other people instead of using the abilities that God gave us. Using our abilities might seem a little risky. Relying on others, or when that fails, blaming others, can feel a lot safer. But that can actually be codependent behavior. And not trusting ourselves also means ignoring our feelings and declaring them to be invalid. Say it with me. Feelings are not valid or invalid. They just are. Not trusting ourselves is having expectations of ourselves that are too low and too high. So too low would be just expecting to spend the day in bed when we don't actually need to. Or expecting ourselves to explode when we get upset. Or expecting marriage to be hard, so just letting it be harder than it actually needs to be. Not trusting ourselves is also having expectations too high, expecting ourselves to do more than we're able to do, expecting ourselves to function without adequate rest or food, expecting perfection on all fronts. Do you think we can trust ourselves too much? Kind of thinking yes and no. Going too far in the trusting ourselves direction is by definition going too far. So it's out of balance. It's a kind of overcorrection that's actually just a different kind of not trusting ourselves. It's not a soft-hearted way of being. The rigidity of these positions cause them to be quite fragile. So trusting yourself is not you doing you regardless of the cost and not caring what others think. It's not avoiding seeking help or advice. It's not placing ultimate trust in yourself. It doesn't mean we stop trusting God. They're not mutually exclusive because God wants to partner with us. We can participate in what God is doing. God is delighted in us and has all kinds of creative ideas for what God in us looks like as that gets expressed in the world. We need the kind of perspective and humility that acknowledges our strength and power and all that we are without going all the way into thinking that we are it, the ultimate authority. Yeah, the mystery that is God is hard to submit to, but let's give it a go. I'm unmysteriously certain that I am not enough to be my own God. Trusting ourselves means knowing ourselves. A lack of self-awareness tends to lead us to selfishness and servitude to the tyranny of the self. We get trapped in patterns of behavior and understandings that we're largely unaware of, and we get run by unconscious things. No wonder we don't trust ourselves. Would you trust your car if it just started turning left at random? Knowing ourselves helps us trust ourselves. Knowing ourselves means we grow in discernment. When we move away from suspicion and judgment and condemnation of ourselves towards curiosity, we begin to ask interesting and more helpful questions. We ask, what's going on inside? What is this touching? Where's this sense of pride coming from? Is this fierté? Pride, and I'm just enjoying the deliciousness of this accomplishment like a child would? Or is this orgueil? Pride coming from my wounds, from my hardened heart, a scarcity mindset, fear that I won't get what I need or I'll look foolish. We ask, what would my soft heart do as it relaxes, secure in the unconditional love of God? On this journey, some interesting things will happen. Slowly, things take time to shift. One thing I noticed as I have begun to move into trusting myself, I found a large blank space in how I related to God. I noticed that so much of my prayer life had centered around wringing my hands, asking God to help me, save me, fix me, because I was convinced that I was irreparably and shamefully broken. As I said, I feel like I'm just beginning this journey of trusting myself. And I noticed this shift in prayer. There was this quiet. I didn't know how to pray anymore. But I noticed a growing sense that prayer could just be kind of letting it be. I could just let God work, and I could still be me. I think that's one of the gifts, Nexus, that you are giving me, is you're letting me be me. This feels amazing. And my prayer has become allowing, a kind of yes and amen to God's work around me and through me. In this new land where I'm not a worm after all, but rather a child of God who's entrusted with big things, God is still God. Still present, still my rock, but also more expansive too. Trusting ourselves leads to trustworthiness. That's a key quality in healthy relationships. As we trust ourselves, we'll also be able to detect trustworthiness in others, because there'll be a pinging. We'll recognize wisdom and truth, and we'll walk in humility, generosity, innocence, patience, sobriety, love, and right action. Our inner lives are marvelously complex. So let's not stop at the surface. Let's look deeper. Let's join God and others on the journey as we come to know ourselves and accept and love ourselves and trust ourselves as we rest in the love of God. Thank you.